This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to By the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me, as always, is my fellow traveler on the sea of which we call reading.
Wow.
I know.
We've really upped the game with this.
I don't know if I have. Anyway, that is, of course, Sharmila Gunnison. And we are joined today by a very special guest. We have in the studio with us Karis Lok. Karis, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be here.
So Karis is, of course, an illustrator. And you might wonder, for a show that's normally so dedicated to just words, why are we talking today about the visual? And that's because you may have heard the saying, don't judge a book by its cover.
Yes, a much overused saying, because we all judge books by their covers.
Yes, all the time, constantly. And so we wanted to talk to somebody who is actually invested in those covers, who actually is involved in making them come to life. And in line with that, I guess, first things first, Karis, what are your thoughts on the whole idea of book covers and their importance? You know, when you work on one, what are some of the main things that you're trying to evoke or that you are kind of working with?
So the book cover is basically the first time most of the readers are going to come into contact with a book. Like if you're walking in a bookstore, you look across the room, it has to catch your eye from maybe, you know, like 10 meters away, 5 meters away. And within that split second, it has to tell you what kind of book it is. Is it a literary book? Is it more of a fiction? Is it geared towards young adults? Is it steampunk? Is it sci-fi? Is it going to have a male or female protagonist on the cover? So a book cover has to do a lot of those things, and it's really not so much a narrative piece, it's more of a marketing piece. So typically when publishers put together book covers, they are thinking a lot more about the marketing side rather than necessarily trying to be absolutely true to the book or depicting like a specific scene from the book.
Mm. But I've seen some of the covers that you've designed. You've done about 6 local book covers.
Yeah.
And I have to say, they're really works of art in their own right, not just a marketing piece for the book. So where does that line lie between creating something that is artistic, that does stand on its own, while also fulfilling that marketing aspect, while also fitting in with what the book is about?
So I think that's where like the artist comes in with their creativity. So normally when I do a cover, I try to read the entire manuscript from start to finish. And this normally isn't required because in publishing, they may not even have the manuscript ready for you to. But I try to read it anyway and then present the publisher with a few different options that capture different aspects of the book so that they can choose and decide which one fits in with the feel they're going for. And although I'm presenting them with different options, it's always going to be in my style and my voice. Because that's what they're hiring you for. They're hiring you for what you bring to the table as an artist and not necessarily just to execute an idea.
And I guess in line with that, right, in your reading of the manuscript, do you ever kind of pick up on something where you're like, this is a great visual, this is the thing that's going to really translate well onto a book cover, onto a sleeve? Actually, we haven't started talking about sleeves, but onto a book cover that maybe didn't necessarily match up to what the brief originally said or didn't match up to what the publisher or the marketing department is saying, no, this is what we want.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there are certain scenes in the book where you're just like, okay, this would work well on the cover. But most of the time, I think it's hard to find book covers that do take specific scenes because you're trying to do a mash of different elements from throughout the whole book. I mean, if you go to a bookstore and look at the covers, let's say in like science fiction and fantasy, which is mostly what I do, you'll notice tropes after a while. Like there's always mm-hmm. that single central character in the middle of the book, or there's like a close-up on the face. Or right now, the current trend is putting objects in the center. So it's either a crown or a knife or a spear or arrow.
A clock. And, sounds like Game of Thrones covers to me.
Yeah. But sometimes I do get to put in things from the books that I would like to be there. And that's quite fun.
So you've actually done a variety of book covers. I mean, you've done nonfiction books like Birds of the Forest of Peninsula Malaysia. And then I think you've done collections of short stories, like this one's called The Straits Collective. Is it Straits Eclectic? But then you've also done Unveiling Choice. You recently did Bernice Chorley's poetry collection, Incantations. So that's quite a variety of you know, genres, a variety of stories or content. How do you then match your style to such different output?
I think, to be honest, it's also because there aren't many people doing book covers in Malaysia. If it was a bigger market like the UK or the US, then you would have to be very specialised in the work you do. Whereas the nice thing about Malaysia is you can be a bit more exploratory and get different kinds of jobs. But I try to look at other books in the same genre. Like I go to the bookstore and look at, let's say, for poetry books. And you notice that poetry book covers are a lot simpler than fiction because they have to convey that they are poetry. And people are looking for a certain thing when they go to the store to look for it. So I do my research in the same field. Sometimes the author has input on what kind of emotion they would like the cover to evoke. And the publisher may also have some say in that. Yeah, but mostly it's doing a lot of research.
Well, that brings me to the question that I wanted to pick up on earlier when you were talking about trends, right? How when you look at certain covers or when you look at genres, certain tropes start to emerge. And it's true. I mean, like, if I think of the bodice ripper type books, you know, you always have a couple and someone is usually showing a bit of shoulder and it's a very specific style. So how much does trend influence what you do? I mean, I imagine that because if I look at my bookshelves also, I can see sometimes seasons and years. I can tell to a certain year, to a certain era, at what point I bought this book because the cover is in a certain style. Yes. So, you know, how much of what you do is kind of taking into account trend and wanting to fit into a genre or a generic look, and how much of it is trying to kind of gain a certain level of timelessness?
So I think that boils down to a few things. Like sometimes the trends are there for a reason. So there's a lot of, I think recently you've seen a lot of titles where they're in the center and they're huge text. And it's also mainly for readability. Like if you're looking at it from across the room, you want to be able to tell what the title text is. And then you know, things like design the illustration so that there's space for the type, like that's always been a timeless thing. So I try to juggle like the needs of the cover along with my own kind of style, which I already draw in.
What is your style? How would you describe it?
That's a hard question. I think it would be like semi-realistic, illustrated, quiet and thoughtful.
With that in mind, right, are there then certain jobs that you just kind of don't do? Because I'm thinking of, I guess, I don't know how many people in Malaysia are actually writing these sorts of books, but I'm thinking of like the James Patterson, you know, style books where it's like
a John Grisham,
Tom Clancy. Yeah, you know, that style where it's like, yeah, guns. Yeah, you know, that sort of thing. So are there certain stories that perhaps you just recognize like, okay, stylistically, this is probably not going to be a good fit for me?
Yeah, well, actually, it's the job of the art director at the publishing house to be the one making that decision. So they wouldn't even come to you if they already know that your body of work doesn't fit with that. So like James Patterson and John Grisham, normally those are photo covers and those are photo illustrations. So they will go for artists who do that kind of work already.
Mm. So when it comes to working in a Malaysian context, is it a very different scene from what would be the case overseas?
Yes, I think that it is very different because the market is so much smaller. And there's no budget for illustrated covers. If there are, it's not very much. So I think that also leads to the greater amount of creative freedom we have over here. So I guess like, you know, talking about covers, I've only really done covers for Gerak Budaya or SIRD, not really for any of the other publishers yet. But for the overseas market, I tend to do more interior work, so the stuff within the book, because in that kind of market, my work would not be the, I guess, style of choice for a cover. Right now, in all the different genres, there are very specific things they're looking for. Like a YA is trending towards more flat and graphic kind of, but handmade illustrations, so we're not doing vectors. We've moved on from vectors and gone back to hand drawing. Sci-fi fantasy has a more polished illustrated look that's not as simple as YA, but not too photorealistic either, depending on the publisher. So in those cases, actually, my work wouldn't be on covers. But in Malaysia, because either because there's a lot less, I guess, fewer artists around, maybe that's how I get to do cover work here.
We're speaking today with Karis Lok, an illustrator, specifically about this issue of dressing up books. You know, we talk a lot about the content of books, but we can't ignore the fact that part of that is also how they look. The cover, the spine, the sleeve, the illustrations within. So we've been talking a little bit about that, and we're going to be continuing our conversation after this. If you want to share some of your favourite book covers, some of your favourite illustrations, we'd love to hear from you. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, write us. We're at buythebook@bfm.my.
Boleh for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Buy the Book with Lynn and Sharmila. Today, our guest in the studio with us is Karis Lok, who works as an illustrator. And we've been talking about book covers specifically. Although I now realize, Karis, that while we've been deep diving into your process, into kind of trends and just different aspects of designing a book cover, why did you decide to do this? I mean, we kind of did not get there. So how did you arrive in this field?
I've always loved reading books since I was young. I mean, that's the reason why I'm wearing glasses now, because I would just lie in the bed in kindergarten and read books and spoil my eyes early on. And one of the first few genres I got into was fantasy. Like, I read Lord of the Rings when I was 10. I read all the Narnia books. And so the Narnia books are illustrated by Pauline Baynes, mm-hmm. who also went on to actually do some work for Tolkien as well. Then I read Garth Nix's Abhorsen trilogy, Sabriel. And the Sabriel cover is one of my favourite covers of all time, the one done by Leo and Diane Dillon. So when growing up and reading all these books, I would always flip to the back cover, and they would always have the name of the artist there. And then I figured out, hey, you know, like, there are people making art for these books, which probably means that they get to read the books. So I figured that, you know, that was something I wanted to do, like, to be able to read, like, manuscripts of books in the genres I loved and also get to make art for them.
So you mentioned a few that you liked, but if you had to pick, you know, some of the best book covers of recent times, are there some that come to mind immediately?
I think Sean Tan's cover for his collection. So he illustrated the Grimm's fairy tales. It's called The Singing Bones. And the best part about it is it's not hand-drawn illustrations. It's sculptures that he made and lighted and photographed, which is a very unusual way of doing illustrations nowadays for books, but it works so well.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favourite, Lim?
A favourite book cover?
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I think it would be an easier one to answer if I was standing in front of my books, yeah, able to look at them. But just thinking it through, I think some of the ones that really struck me are, I think, ones that also often make the lists, if you look them up, of like best covers. Full disclosure, of course, we were looking at them just, yes, a little while ago. And I think the one that struck me actually was The Godfather, which, you know, yeah, we both have gone on record of talking, we read way too young,
yes,
which is why maybe the cover made such an impression.
With the puppets. Mm. Yeah. We did look at that list and there were quite a few that struck me as well. But I think thinking about book covers, the one that I always think about, because I coveted this book so deeply, and then one year my sister got it for me, was the anthology of the Narnia books. Back when I was, I think, 15 or 16, this version came out with a picture of Aslan on the cover. And it's this beautiful golden lion mane, and that's the entire cover. The moment I saw that in the bookstore, and, you know, back then you can't afford to buy a 80 ringgit anthology by yourself, right? So I kept, like, thinking I wanted it. And then when my sister got it, it was really one of my best birthdays. And that really depicts to me the power of what a book cover can do. Because I had the Narnia books, I'd read them, but I wanted that version so much because it just depicted what those stories were about for me.
I mean, I know people who will buy books, who will buy different editions just for the cover. Mm-hmm. So I think that tells you also about the power of said cover. I mean, like, when we were talking about doing the show, there was also the Penguin reissue of 1984, right? The one where they black out,
yeah,
the author's name, the title of the book, and, yes, you're just supposed to know. And it's so clever. So I think there are these different elements that go into it. But coming back to, I think, what it is that you do, Karis, there is also, of course, always this issue of money. And we talk about this quite a bit in general because we talk about how much writers are able, whether writers are able to make a living. And if we're talking
spoiler
on that...
Spoiler alert, in Malaysia, not really.
Exactly. So while we're talking about writers being able to make a living, can book illustrators make a living?
It depends where you're getting your jobs from. Like, I'll be quite upfront. I think the majority of my clients are not Malaysian, and that's the only way I can actually do this full-time sustainably. So for context, like in the US, if you had your book cover out and it's done by one of the big five publishers, like a major publisher, the range for a cover would normally be about $2,000 to $5,000, like US dollars. If it's a smaller press, maybe that goes down to about $500 to $1,500. If it's self-published, it could be slightly lesser. But those are the figures that you would typically see in the US market. And in Malaysia, what most people do is just take the number and throw away the dollar sign and put like the ringgit in front of it.
Yeah. And what about when it comes to, the nitty-gritties of things like copyright and so on? How much control does the artist have over these aspects?
That really depends on the contract that's reached between the publisher and the artist. So normally when I work with Grab Budaya, we do have a contract that we set up and it's agreed that they have usage rights to use the illustration for the cover for a specified duration and for certain usages. So you can't put it on merchandising, you can't print it on like shirts and bags and go and sell that, but you can use it for marketing of the book and promotion of the book. And I think this is quite standard for publishing contracts. Like, they are very clear about what they can do and what they can't do with the art. They normally do not buy copyright of the art, because if you do a full buyout of rights, that normally costs like 3 to 5 times more. And you don't need to have full control of the art, really. Like, all they need it is just for the cover and for the marketing.
So while we're talking about marketing, right, one important element, I think, of modern book marketing is Instagram, is the fact that people like to Instagram book covers. Yes. There is the whole issue of the flat lay with an artful cup of coffee.
Yes.
I've never done that. Look, I mean, there are people who have dedicated their entire profiles, their entire feeds to, book covers. Is that something that you think has changed the aesthetic of how book covers are designed? And is that something that you, I guess, factor in when you are designing your work?
I think publishers are definitely looking at this, and I'm not sure how much it influences their decisions or not, because they are working on books that will come out maybe like a year or 2 years in advance. So in a way, you can't really say that they're responding to trends, because they may even be ahead of the trend and thinking up new things. But I try not to think about it too much, because
yeah.
I mean, I have complicated thoughts about social media and how that affects your work as an artist. But I will go on Instagram and look at some of those pictures to see what's going on in the book world. And because I've been doing a lot of maps lately for fantasy books, there's even a hashtag called Map Monday, where they just open the book to the map and they take very artistic pictures like off the maps.
Do you think that this sort of social media and the sharing of the book cover has fundamentally changed the way that even readers relate to the book covers themselves?
So I've noticed, especially in young adult fiction, because a lot of the readers are on Instagram and the publishers go there to engage them. So it's a way for the publishers to like generate even more attention for the book among readers who really enjoy it and readers who want to find community in the books that they love.
We've been speaking with Karis Lok, who is an illustrator, and specifically we've been talking today about the art surrounding book covers. And you know what? We are heading to footnotes, so keep it here for that. We do, however, want to hear from you about your favourite book covers. Do you have particular things that you like? Are you a follower of the hashtag Map Mondays? We want to hear from you.
Hashtag Bookstagram.
Yes, exactly. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, write us at buythebook@bfm.my. That brings us to Footnotes. Karis is still with us. And we've been spending a lot of time, as we alluded to, talking about whether or not you can judge a book by its cover, whether or not perhaps you should, because someone put a lot of work into it. And now we wanted to look at illustrations as a whole. We did say we were all going to bring a favourite, but before that, I had a question for you, Karis, which is, you said a lot of your work abroad actually focuses on illustrations within the book. How is that a different process for you from designing the cover?
So whereas the cover is, I mean, the marketing department has a lot more say in the cover, and even the book buyers would also have some kind of say in that. The interior illustrations are really much more about just how the artist interprets the author's world, and the author has a lot more input in that. So for example, for maps, like when I work on a map, they send me the manuscript. I try to read through everything, like make a lot of notes. Normally, that's a very rough author sketch, which doesn't look anything like a map. So you take that and you look at all your notes and you try to figure out, okay, geographically, how would this all come together? How would the world work? How does the weather work? Where should the trees and the desert be? And you put that together in a map. And I try to make maps that look like they came from the world itself. Mm-hmm. So
can I just say that I'm staring at you in like absolute wonder, because I'm like, it's finally clicking for me. You're the person who draws those maps that I stare at.
Yeah, and I didn't know that was a thing you could get paid to do, but apparently it is. So
that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm also thinking about the kind of work that would be involved in making the key, you know, just kind of making the scale of a map. And my mind is being boggled as we speak. So, yeah. I think we will start with you, Karis, since it was something that led you on your actual literal current career path. Do you have favourite illustrations or illustrators? You know, are there any that particularly spring to mind?
I mean, there's so many, so I feel like, you know, singling out one or two is going to do a disservice to the rest. So I'll pick maybe like one from a bit earlier and then one maybe modern illustrator.
You're the guest, so you can pick two.
Yeah. I guess, like I said, like when I was growing up, I mean, the Narnia books were something I read, and definitely Pauline Bain's work in there. So she did a lot of the chapter headings, like small little spots you would see at the end or the beginnings. I think she may have done the map as well, I'm not entirely sure. But because those were some of the earliest like book illustrations I saw as a child, and they were very simple, they're done in pen and ink, most of them black and white. So I think that definitely had a big influence on me. And if you look at today, there are so many illustrators working in many different styles because they can now print much better quality illustrations. So Rovina Kai, who is an Australian illustrator, is someone that I like a lot. So she's done work on fantasy stuff. She's also done some of the, I think she's done Wuthering Heights, if I'm not mistaken, interior illustrations for Folio Society's version. And she has a very unique style that no one else really can get close to, and also a way of taking the narrative and showing it in both a very like soft, gentle way, but also graphic and easy to read.
Well, then my favourite illustrator is probably someone who, for me, is so intrinsically tied to one of my favourite childhood authors, Quentin Blake. He used to illustrate all of Roald Dahl's books. And I think the reason that, you know, his illustrations immediately spring to mind is because it was really one of those cases where all the characters that Roald Dahl wrote, in my mind, they are visualized by those illustrations. And they're actually very simple illustrations. They're sort of...
They're hilarious.
They're hilarious. And you know, when he talks about the twits or BFG, you know exactly what they look like because Quentin has done such a good job of bringing those characters to life. They're not complex. They're not overly fussy, but they just suit the style of those stories so well. The slight messiness, the rough around the edges, slightly scary looking. For me, even till today, when I think of illustrations, I always think of Quentin Blake.
My first Roald Dahl book was The Twits. And I really think that the Quentin Blake illustrations made it. You know, it just kind of everything clicked together for me. And then I read Isio Trot and I was like, this is just perfection. And so, yeah, I completely get where you're coming from with this. So Quentin Blake was going to be one that I brought up. And then I suddenly remembered an illustrator that I love so much that I have his work tattooed on me. And yet somehow in talking about this, I forgot. And that is Edmund Dulac, who illustrated Well, I think a number of books, but the ones that I am thinking of specifically is his work to do with Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tales. And they are kind of the opposite of, really almost the direct opposite of Quentin Blake's work, in that they are very, very detailed. They're very, very beautiful.
Very ornate, right?
Very ornate, and very much a product of the magical world from which they came. And I think that's why I love them so much, because listening to you, Karis, talk earlier about Lord of the Rings and how fantasy and fantasy illustrations are sometimes just the most beautiful things, it reminded me, yeah, that like my favorite illustrator, really, I think in many ways, is Edmund Dulac and his work for Hans Christian Andersen.
So, are you going to tell us what tattoo you have?
Yeah, it is. It's from The Snow Queen. It is of Kay kissing the reindeer. Yeah, that's mine. But there are so many that I love. And I think if you haven't had the chance to read those stories alongside those illustrations, I envy you. It's a great pleasure.
I think that's really the thing, isn't it? The best of the illustrations make you feel like the story would be incomplete without them there. And I think that's when you know that that magic has been kind of achieved.
Yeah. Yay. I'm quite enjoying having all these memories pop up of all these different illustrations. Yeah. So thank you so much, Karis, for joining us today.
No problem. Glad to be here, and always fun to be talking about books and illustrations.
And you must come back someday then. We'll think of something else to talk to you about.
Just favorites, I think. We could do a whole show on that. Our guest today has been Karis Loke, an illustrator who works with books, really, book covers, art within books. We would love to hear from you. What are your favorite illustrations and illustrators? What are your favorite book covers? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, and of course write to us buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.